is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, Marco Rubio is saying that he's running for president today. Hillary Clinton announced yesterday in a short little two-minute video that starts out with a whole bunch of people saying, I'm moving on and I'm getting ready to do some cool stuff. And then she comes on toward the end and says, me too, I'm going to become president. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but, you know, I'm running for president. And I found this fascinating. A couple of things that I wanted to just run by you relative to this. Some perspectives and whatnot. Here's my biggest concern about Hillary Clinton's concern is the wrong word. My biggest expectation of how the Reich is going to deal with Hillary Clinton, both as a candidate and if should she become president as a president, is they're going to deal badly. And the reason why is that misogyny, the hatred of women, in this country, arguably, is worse than bigotry against people of color. Now, I realize a lot of people of color might be going, what? But black men got the vote. I mean, it, you know, when Reconstruction got sabotaged in the 1870s, they also got the vote taken away. But for a while there, but black men got the vote before any women. That was in the 1870s. Women got the vote in 1920 when the 19th Amendment was passed. So you've got that, for example. I'm not sure that a side-by-side analysis, you know, who makes more money, who has more opportunities, blah, 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 is all that useful. But I think that it's really important to note that misogyny runs very deep in our culture, that women are held generally to different standards than men are, and that for a job that has always been held by a man for the entire history of this country, applying for that job, as it were, a woman applying for that job, it's going to be tough. As evidence, I mean, this is when I talk about misogyny, you say, well, what's he talking about? For example, back the last time, I think this was actually during the Bill Clinton presidency that Rush Limbaugh came out with his Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox commercial, his spoof ad. There was also the Hillary Clinton Nutcracker, if you'll recall, that was being sold. I think that was in the late 90s. It might have been, you know, when she was active in the healthcare thing and stuff like that. But it might have been later on. It might have been when Hillary was seriously thinking of, well, was running, you know, against Barack Obama in the primaries. I'm not sure. But the audio is pretty awful. But this is that infamous ad that apparently Limbaugh's buddies or somebody put together, and he aired it first. Here it is.
Ladies, are you fed up with men calling the shots? Are you looking for a new weapon in the war of the sexes? Then you need the Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox. You can finally grab the power that's keeping Hillary Clinton safe from tough media questions. The Hillary Rodham Clinton testicle lockbox is easy to use and totally effective. Just snap it around the nether regions of the potential offender, and bingo, you're in control.
Hey, babe, give me the remote. The Giants are on.
But I want to watch Senator Clinton. She's speaking tonight.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm in charge.
In charge of this, Buster. What are you doing? Now sit there and shut up, and maybe you'll get your testicles back. Oh, man, how am I going to tell the guys at the plant about this?
If you order now, you can supersize your order in the double deluxe testicle lockbox, big enough for 8 dwarves and 8 moderators. This Christmas, give a gift to the woman who wants everything. Make it a Hillary Clinton testicle lockbox. Available everywhere. Power is great.
Right, right. So, I mean, it's that kind of sick and twisted, quote, humor or satire that is really going to start coming out of the woodwork. Some thoughts on policy also. I want to get back to misogyny. And in fact, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is, do you think, I mean, look at the intensity of the racism that has been directed against President Obama. We have never seen a, I believe, exclusively white Republican Party. Well, they elected, I think, their first black member of the House. But basically, all these white guys in the Republican Party getting together to sabotage the presidency of our first African-American president. They were not going to celebrate this. The whole caucus room conspiracy. It was all about destroy his presidency. Literally the night it started, January 20th, 2009, literally the night that he was sworn into office, destroy his presidency and prevent him from having any kind of legacy. And if he does accomplish anything, demonize it and ultimately take it apart. We are not going to allow Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, we are not going to allow him to have the legacy of a John Kennedy or even a Lyndon Johnson, and certainly not a Franklin Roosevelt. The Republicans were very, very committed to having people think of Obama like Coolidge or the way that they have mischaracterized Carter and his presidency. Anyhow, some of the folks, various posts, I thought this, you know, Hillary's rollout. Over at DSC wrote over at Democratic Underground, I have to say I'm nothing short of amazed that an announcement video that features two gay couples is being dismissed as nothing special. I'm sure that those saying this can find the dozens of other such videos that have taken place in past races. Two different gay couples were in Hillary's announcement video. Isn't that news? There's an interesting piece also. Peter Beinart writing for The Atlantic, and Skinner reposted this over at DU also, or pieces of it. And Peter Beinart writes, every presidential campaign is a bet on the American mood, and he talks about Hillary's, you know, running for president back in 2007 and the speech she gave when she declared for senator in New York in 2000. And here are some of the phrases from her 2000 announcement. These are the things that Hillary Clinton said she was running on. And I quote, voluntary uniform rating system for movies and films, welfare, more police in the streets, teacher testing in the face of boycotts. I don't believe government is the solution to all our problems. Parents, all parents must be responsible. I mean, this is basically, as Peter Beinart writes, this is basically the Bill Clinton candidacy, is what Hillary ran on as a senator, that she was running on the way that Clinton was president. But this announcement yesterday, as Peter Beinart said, all that cultural conservatism is gone in the video she issued last night. It's not just the image of a gay male couple holding hands while announcing their impending wedding, followed later by what appears to be a lesbian couple. It's not just the biracial couple or the brothers speaking Spanish. It's also the absence of culturally conservative imagery. No policeman, no clergyman, one barely noticeable church. Instead, the video starts with a woman who is moving her so her daughter can attend a better school. A bit later, it features a woman who's staying home with her kid who's going back to work. In both cases, there's no father in sight. And, you know, you just go through this whole thing. The headline is, an unabashedly liberal Hillary Clinton. I want to tell you about Myra Bradwell, by the way, just as a kind of cautionary tale. And an interesting piece over at Politicus U.S., PoliticusUSA.com. In the headline, Hillary Clinton's campaign launch contains the message that Republicans fear most.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll share that with you, too, when we come back. Stick around. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and there it is. Lost my mouse for a minute. Benny in Mobile, Iowa. Hey, Benny, what's up?
Hi, Tom. This is Denny. Wanted to talk about Hillary and whether she's going to have the energy given her age.
She's younger than Reagan. Say what?
Excuse me?
She's younger than Reagan was. She's younger than Mitt Romney was when he ran.
Oh, yeah.
I think she has plenty of energy, Benny. She's been traveling all over the world. She's been the Energizer Bunny. That is not my concern at all, frankly. Benny, thank you for the call. That is going to be the thing. I mean, I'm assuming that Benny was genuinely concerned. But you're going to start hearing now people calling into, particularly into progressive talk shows, pretending to be Democrats who are pretending to be concerned about Hillary being female, being old, being, you know, whatever. You know, too many scandals, too much stuff with her. And keep in mind, these, quote, scandals outside of Monica Lewinsky were all manufactured by the Republicans. It's not like the Clintons draw scandals. It's that they draw Republicans because they're effective Democratic politicians. Big D. So, Charles, watching Free Speech TV in La Push, Washington. Hey, Charles.
Hey, good morning, Tom. You know, I was just thinking that when I was listening to you about, you know, people are going to start calling in about, you know, her age.
Right.
But that wasn't what I was calling about. I was, you know, the concern you had about misogynistic of women.
Right.
You know, let them. You know, they do that at their own apparel. You know, when they start making all those statements about.
Mm-hmm. So you think that, yes and no, Charles. Here's what I envision happening, and it's pretty much the same thing that happened to Obama. At the high level, the major politicians, they will say things that might be interpreted as speaking in code or maybe not. We'll see, or maybe, you know, is America ready for a woman president? You know, I don't know. And, you know, those kind of questions that imply a message. But what's going to be happening at the level of email? What's going to be happening at the level of message boards? What's going to be happening at the level of comments on articles about Hillary all over the internet? And what's going to be happening in all probability on right-wing hate radio and on Fox so-called news is this demonizing of her specifically because she's a woman? And, you know, right down to, you know, comments like, you know, let's hope it's not that time of the month when Putin says something or, you know, I mean, these are the kind of things that men have used historically to diminish or to rationalize their control over women and to diminish the power of women. And so I'm expecting that, and I'm expecting it to get really, really ugly. I mean, we've already seen the early stages of it. Some of the most astonishingly unflattering pictures of Hillary, coming out of right-wing sites. But then on the other hand, you know, left-wing sites have done some pretty nasty pictures of Dick Cheney. So, but Charles, thanks for the call. We'll see how it plays out, right? We will see how it plays out. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Here's another interesting thing about the video that Hillary released yesterday. You know, no battleships, no soldiers, no cops, no priests, no ministers, no Bibles. We're going to have to go back and look at it again and see if there's even a flag in it. I don't know, but presumably there would be a flag. But Hillary Clinton says that she's running for president. And Jason Easley, writing over at PoliticusUSA.com, under the headline, Hillary Clinton's launch campaign contains the message that Republicans fear most. Now, let me remind you that in 2000, when Hillary Clinton was running for senator, and she was a senator for 6 years from the state of New York. In 2000, when Hillary Clinton was running for senator, part of her stump speech, one of her stump speech regular phrases was, I don't believe government is the solution to all our problems. In other words, she was running as a conservative. In her ad yesterday, she said, this is at 2 minutes, 18 seconds into the video, she said, I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president. Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times, but the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. In other words, she's running on a platform of government can work for us, and I'm the person who can make government work for us. At least so far. Now, folks like, you know, the Bold Progressives, boldprogressives.org, are pushing aggressively for Hillary to take these very progressive positions, and so far it looks like it might be working. Myra Bradwell was an amazing woman. She was born in 1831, lived through the Civil War. After the Civil War, she had been a school teacher, and in 1855, her husband became a lawyer who was admitted to the Chicago Board, they moved to Chicago. He became a successful judge. And she became a lawyer, right? She had four kids, two died at an early age. She's just an amazing woman. So she became a lawyer and applied for membership to the Illinois Bar. And the Illinois State Supreme Court said, no, ain't going to happen. Now, keep in mind, at that point in time, and this, some of these may have been cleaned up a little bit by that, in part because Myra Bradwell helped rewrite the laws in 1868 about what women can own and what they can't own. But reading to you from my book, Unequal Protection, Chapter 2, The Corporate Conquest of America, this is right after, you know, now corporations have been given personhood. And African-American men have been given the right to vote. So Sarah Bradwell, at this time, a married woman was not allowed to make out a will because she was not allowed to own land or legally control anything else worthy of willing to another person. Any property a woman brought into the marriage became her husband's at the moment of marriage and would revert to her only if he died and she did not remarry. Even then, she would get only one-third of her husband's property. And what third that was and how it could be used were determined by a male corporate court-appointed executor who would supervise her for the rest of her life or until she remarried. When a widow died, the executor would either take the property for himself or decide to whom it would pass. The woman had no say in the matter because she had no right to write a will. Women could not sue in a court of law except under the same weak procedures allowed for the mentally ill and children supervised by men. If the man of a family household died, the executor would decide who would raise the wife's children and in what religion. She had no right to make those decisions. If the woman was poor, it was a virtual certainty that her children would be taken from her. It was impossible in the new United States of America for a married woman to have legal responsibility for her children, control her own property, buy or sell land, or even obtain an ordinary license. So anyhow, Sarah Bradwell takes this to the Supreme Court in Illinois saying, I want to be a lawyer. I'm fully qualified. I can pass the bar. And this is what the Justice Joseph P. Bradley wrote in his decision, 1873, Bradwell v. Illinois. The family institution is repugnant to the idea of a woman adopting a distinct and independent career from that of her husband. So firmly fixed was this sentiment in the founders of the common law that it became a maxim of that system of jurisprudence that a woman has no legal existence separate from that of her husband, who is regarded as her head and as her representative in the social state. So, in other words, you know, women came to the court and said, hey, can we have some of that personhood? No. Women didn't get personhood until 1920, and it took an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to do it, just like giving African Americans personhood in the 1870s. It took three amendments to the Constitution. But it happened much later for women. So with regard to whether Hillary is going to be a corporate Dem or a progressive, whether she's going to be a champion of the people or not, whether she's going to run to the left and then in the midterms or in the general election, run to the center in quotes, how she's going to come up with $2.5 billion because the Supreme Court has basically said that's the only way you can become president and how she's going to do that without selling her soul. These are all questions I don't have the answers to and we're going to have to wait to find out. But the odds are very high that she is going to be the nominee of the Democratic Party, that there won't even be a primary. We'll see. And I think, frankly, the odds are very high that Hillary Clinton on the – let me rephrase this. The best Republican in the field, who is probably, in my mind – well, he's both the best and the worst, would be Rand Paul, because, you know, he's no to drones, no to spying, yes to pot legalization, yes to gay marriage. Now, he has changed his mind on gay marriage, and now he's opposed to it. He has changed his mind on pot legalization, he's opposed to it. He's changed his mind on abortion, he's opposed to it. But in any case, he's got that stuff. But even on his best day, Rand Paul is so much worse than the worst possible incarnation of Hillary Clinton, who was, by the way, one of the most liberal members of the U.S. Senate when she was in the Senate, let us not forget. So let's see where this goes before we just, you know, create the circular firing
squad. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So I'm curious your thoughts on the rollout, on the announcement, on everything I've had to say. We'll talk after the break. 28 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Bob Seska, writing over at thedailybanter.com, ready for Hillary derangement syndrome? It's interesting. Matt Iglesias broke down the Hillary Clinton introduction video. There are 38 people in that video. 20 of them are women, so more than half are women. 13 of them are people of color, about a third. 7 of them are women of color. Number of speaking roles for women of color, 5. Number of speaking roles for people of color, 7. Number of same-sex couples, 2. Number of references to career readiness, 2. Number of references to motherhood, 3. Number of references to school or college, 2. Number of references to inequality, 1. No concrete policies laid out, of course. Or maybe I shouldn't say, of course. But Bob Seska writes, watch carefully to see if any Republicans release a video favorably showing two men holding hands. This is what Hillary Clinton just did. Elsewhere, Clinton will likely appoint center-left justices to the Supreme Court. She'll veto any legislation to repeal Obamacare. I mean, these are things we just know for a fact. And she'll continue the Obama administration's approach to the climate crisis. Republicans will do the exact opposite on all of those things. The best Republican they've got is going to be worse than the worst Democrat on earth. And the worst Democrat is not Hillary Clinton. All of that aside, the whole GOP light meme is just another version of the both parties are the same meme. It's good for some retweets on Twitter, but it makes no sense in terms of a breakdown of Clinton's positions on the issue. Indeed, when Clinton served in the Senate, she was considered the 11th most liberal senator. That's basically in the top 20th percentile in terms of liberal votes. That's light years away from being a dino, a Democrat in name only. So we'll see where this thing goes. The misogyny has already begun. Shane was telling me about, where'd you see that H.O.? Crooks and Liars. Okay, over on Crooks and Liars, apparently somebody has taken the Hillary logo, which is like an H with the crossbar, it's got a little arrow on it, and put the O, the Obama O, next to it. And, you know, right. So, anyway, your thoughts on all this. Tom in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Tom, since most men in the lives of women will also vote for Hillary, I think she will get more than 70% of the popular vote.
Dream on, Tom. She is going to have billions of dollars spent demonizing her. This is going to be a tight election. And on top of that, you've got, you know, right now, I think the count is around 4.5-5 million Americans have been pushed off the voting rolls because they don't have the right ID in the right states. people who are college students who don't have a driver's license, or elderly people who no longer drive, disabled people. All these folks have been blocked from voting by, and poor people who live in cities and don't need a driver's license because they don't own a car. All of these people have been blocked from voting by Republican voter suppression ID laws in, I think, 19 states now. It's going to be a tough one, Tom. I think it's going to be a real tough one. I would love to live in a country where men would vote for a woman who, you know, who men would set aside their misogyny or whatever because they have women in their lives and, you know, gives them some insight. But I'm skeptical. But, Tom, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Let me just say this. I think that I would love to see a world that was predominantly run by women. I certainly can't see it being any worse than what it is right now. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. Well, I've said many times I think testosterone is the most dangerous drug on earth, and it's dangerous for men, too. Usually when they screw up, it's because of testosterone.
You better know it. Listen, I'm really concerned. I don't think that even if Hillary is the Democratic nominee, and it looks like she is going to be the default candidate for same, I'd like to see Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders run. But my concern is, and I don't think she will get win the general election, and I'll tell you why. I think that there is a serious underestimation in this country of how much hatred, specifically racial hatred, has been directed towards Barack Obama. And I can guarantee you in the next 180 days, the next 6 months, you are going to hear more and more and louder the term or the phrase, taking America back.
Right.
Taking it back from who and what doesn't require a mental giant to figure it out.
No.
But I think that there, I live in the Inland Empire in Southern California, which seems kind of demographically schizophrenic. It's basically working class, blue collar, white people, but yet they vote overwhelmingly Republican. And it's almost palpable, the hatred for this president and the backlash that's going to follow. And I just really believe that you're absolutely right. This election is going to be ugly.
Yeah, this is going to be insanely nasty. And they're going to try to bring along the racists. Most of the racists are probably also misogynists as well. You know, they hate people of color. They hate women. It's, you know, virtually all white males. But they're going to try and bring them along by tying Clinton to Hillary Clinton to President Obama. I mean, that's already happening. I saw a web ad yesterday that talked about the Clinton-Obama or the Obama-Clinton foreign policy. And, you know, and attacked it, obviously. But the whole point was to try to tie the two of them together. So if you hated Obama, you're going to hate Clinton even more. I mean, that's, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's going to be awful. And this whole dog whistle taking back America thing. Yeah, we all know what that's all about. Kenyatta, thank you for the call. It's always nice to hear from you. Becky in Los Angeles. Hey, Becky, what's up? Becky? Listening on Sirius in L.A.? Okay. You got to listen to your phone because there's a delay in the transmission. Donna in Columbia, California. Hey, Donna.
Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
Great. Thank you. I'm very disturbed by the announcement by Hillary because the Democratic Party should have a deeper bench than it currently has at her announcement is proof of that. And I hate to see progressives give up on their principles so easily. She has a really dismal record, which anyone can look into.
For example, she was the 11th most progressive member of the United States Senate for the 8 years she was in the Senate.
While she was Secretary of State, she made it very clear she was going to give the okie-dokie to the XL pipeline. Turns out that the studies that had been done under her purview were deeply flawed, and that she also had a person from TransCanada on her staff at the time. It's that kind of seamy behavior that she's so capable of. Well, you know, her being the 11th, means that the rest of them were pretty conservative. So that's not a good point either. And being, like I said,
so Donna, what's your solution?
Doesn't even make a very
so Donna, you're doing a really good job right now of basically a. Can you turn me up so that Donna can hear me? You're doing a really good job right now of basically running a negative. Oh, Donna just dropped off the board. Of basically running a negative ad. I mean, the whole goal of negative advertising is not to get people to vote for the other person. In other words, somebody calls up and trashes Hillary Clinton. The goal of, and if it was a Republican operative, or if it's just somebody who, I don't know, doesn't get politics or whatever, calling up and trashing Hillary is not going to cause anybody to vote for your Republican candidate, whoever it may be. It's going to cause somebody not to vote, period. And I find that just, you know, I think it's just, it's offensive, frankly. anyway. Cliff in Claremore, Oklahoma. Hey, Cliff. Oh, we only have 30 seconds? We got a minute. Okay, Cliff, it's yours.
Yeah. Okay. This is going to be an uphill battle, I will tell you this for sure, because she was first lady most of the time. We've had a country where we patronize the first ladies, and when Hillary was first lady, they demonized her because she wasn't typical first lady material in terms of like what they were used to at the time. And if they demonized and savaged Obama, and still do, they're going to demonize and savage Hillary. I see the handwriting on the wall, and I pretty much know for a fact that even though she's been in D.C. for over 40 years, or knows D.C. that long, they're still going to find ways of sabotaging her when she does become president.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. It's going to be were she to become president, I'm guessing that the Republicans will do the same thing they've been doing to Obama, which is try to destroy her presidency. Which is why I think it's really vitally important that all of us get out and get involved in politics. Cliff, thank you for the call. We show up, we participate, we become part of the Democratic Party. It's step one. Step one. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour. And, you know, Jill Stein is great. No chance. No chance. Let's be real. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. And Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's on your mind?
First, one little thing. I won't vote for Rand Paul because he called me a faker. I'm a disabled person. I don't forget that. Secondly, I think that people need to stop and think about this presidential race starting so early can be a distraction from other things going on. We don't want TPP passed. Anybody call their senator?
Right.
Speaking of senators, mine will be 82 next year. He is running, which means that at the end of that six-year term, he'll be 88. John McCain is 80. Is anybody paying attention to the age of these men?
Right.
You know, and for Pete's sakes, people, how many years do you want someone, you know, like Ted Cotton in the Senate, and do you want him to own his seat for 40 or 50 years?
Right.
And I think that people need to pay attention to what else is going on instead of being distracted by this. Personally, you know, I want my grumpy grandpa to run for president, you know, Bernie and Elizabeth, but I don't know if I'll get what I want. But people need to stop and remember that you've got a chance to support the president we want by replacing these senators who do not work for us. They need to get out there and find somebody, preferably a woman, to run for their Senate offices somewhere. You know, 36 of them are up for reelection. Do you want John McCain running again? Yeah. You sitting in that seat again? You know, don't be distracted by all this stuff that's going on in the media about this guy will be great for president. You know, we've got more important issues right than being distracted right now. We need to make sure we have candidates for the Senate so we can get control of the country to support the president that we want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree with. And not just the Senate, by the way, Norma. You know, the Koch brothers have funded an organization now that is going in and doing, you know, Alec for a long time is doing this at the state level, helping take over state, you know, houses and or preparing laws, actually, for introduction. But now they've got this organization that's devoted to even municipalities, you know, flipping them hard right.
But if we want our a president to elect a president we want, we did you cut me off?
No, you're still on the air, Norma.
Okay. But if we want to get a president in there that we like and we want, and that president will appoint these Supreme Court judges, we don't need a fight in Congress on whether or not they get approved. We need to be able to make sure that we have enough control to support a president that will get us some even-minded, level-headed judges so that our country doesn't go down the tubes in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And by the way, when I was married, my husband drove my car to work, sold it, and came home with a new car for himself in the state of Alabama, which was legal.
Go! Oh. It was...
misogynistic state.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
That was in the 70s. But in the 90s, I remarried, and I put my husband on my Sears card. The next thing I knew, he took my name off. And when I called Sears, they said, well, he's head of household. He's the man. He can do what he wants. I said, it's my account. I've had it since the 70s. Well, I'm sorry, man, but that's just the way the law is.
In Alabama. That is amazing. Norma, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your stories with us. They're great. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where despair is not an option. Talk media for the sane among us. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles. What's on your mind?
Well, I was thinking about you this weekend.
How so?
Because I had a joke I had to tell you. I was looking at the, to me it all ties in with Hillary as well. But I was looking at President Obama's news conference that he had on Saturday about meeting the leader of Cuba,
mm-hmm.
Raul Castro.
Right.
And also they had questions about Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if, you know, anybody picked up on him, but I think he had a little smart comment for the Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
And it went something like, it went something like this. I don't know if anybody caught it, but he said, a foolish consistency is a hobgoblin of little minds.
Yep. Yep.
And that's basically for Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Yep.
And, you know, it goes to depict these Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, and these conservatives. They're at his, first of all, we don't even have a deal in place, and they're nitpicking at it, and they're trying to deconstruct it as best as they can.
Right.
And put the doubt in everybody's mind that this isn't. And the same thing I feel is the same thing with this, you know, with Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care what type of Democrat it is. You know, I mean, obviously we don't want one that's too conservative, but it beats what they have on the other side of the aisle any day, any time. I'll stake my life on it.
There you go.
Because basically every guy over there, it seems like, you know, I don't even think Rand Paul can win, because basically – he has baggage, and I believe it's his dad.
Yeah.
Because
personally, I think that what we're going to see is I have no insight into who Hillary Clinton's running mate is going to be, or even if there's going to be a Democratic primary, which is a whole another thing. I mean, you got Martin O'Malley out there talking about running. You've got Bernie Sanders talking about running. You've got Lincoln Chafee, now former Republican, talking about running as a Democrat. All these men, no Elizabeth Warren, but, you know, c'est la vie. But on the right, on the Republican side, I would, you know, I'm not a betting man by and large, but I would bet that it's going to be a Bush-Walker ticket, that it's, you know, that Jeb Bush is, you know, he's got the family dynasty, he's got the Republican Party machine, he's got all his stuff, you know, that is going to kick into gear. And then Scott Walker's got the Koch brothers behind him, so he's got $1 billion behind him. So Jeb Bush is going to need him, And then Scott Walker is a young guy. He's in his mid to late 40s, if I recall correctly, which means that 8 years down the road, if Jeb Bush has two presidential terms, Scott Walker running for president would just make perfect sense, and he'd only be in his, you know, late 50s, early 60s. So anyhow, that's my take on it. Charles, thanks for the call.
Can I, one more thing?
Yeah.
Well, we're ready for this with the women now. I mean, you know, we need new blood in the system.
Yeah.
And basically, by them not giving women a fair pay, what that does is every time that we do want to, like say they do take taxes out, that money isn't going to Medicare because, I mean, their portion, you know, if they were getting paid the same as a man, it's not going to Medicare. It's not going to.
You're right.
You know.
Yeah, discrimination hurts all of us. It hurts all of us. Charles, thank you for the even gender discrimination. That, or especially, you know, thank you, Charles. Excellent points. Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita.
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Yeah, I don't know about Jeb Bush picking Scott Walker. I think he might go with Susana Martinez because you got two white men. I don't know if he wants to do that.
I think that goes that goes well in the Republican circles, you know, white men. And Jeb Bush is married to a Hispanic woman, and he's got Hispanic-looking children. That he's going to make the most of that. Oh, that's right. He registered to vote as Hispanic. That's right. Yeah. So
Far as Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was done.
No, as far as Hillary Clinton, I think one thing I really like about her is she's always been very responsive to the mood of the country, And I think that video shows that. And also, if we want her to be more progressive, we have to elect a progressive Congress, and we have to stick with them.
Yep.
We can't abandon her after 2 years like we did with Bill Clinton or we did with Barack Obama.
I agree.
FDR and LBJ were both able to enact very progressive policies because they had majority Democratic Congresses,
right.
Huge majority.
Right.
So we always make that mistake. We abandon our Democratic presidents, and then we complain that they're not progressive enough.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very consequential election. I think this election may determine the fate and future of the United States because we are so far down the road right now toward corporatism or, you know, whatever other word you want to use.
And we can't risk having a Republican picking our Supreme Court justices.
You're right. And three will be over 80 the day that the next president is sworn in, and the fourth, Stephen Breyer, will be 79. So this is going to be a consequential presidency. Yeah. Anita, I got to run along. Thanks for the call. John in Portland, listening on X-Ray FM. Hey, John. Hillary?
Oh, yeah. Hi, Tom. My points are that we have to remember that this is a winner-take-all system. There ain't no second place. And the electoral college numbers that come out of each state, and if my state, Oregon, and I've lived in Washington, if they're close, I'm going to go with, of course, the Democratic candidate number one because of the system is corrupted by so much money. And I like the woman that previously called comments on, hey, we can't handle another Republican. If we want to save our democracy and correct some of these injustices to the majority of us. And also, I think no matter who's the candidate, we can appeal to women because women have children. And I worked as a voter activist, and it really works when I bring up, well, why don't you vote for your children and run down the list of Democratic programs? And thanks very much, Tom. I remember when you voted in, I think it was Vermont, and was a clear majority, Democratic majority, and you voted for an independent.
Yeah, in 2000, I voted for Ralph Nader. Yeah, I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, and Louise voted for Al Gore. But it was because I knew that Vermont was going to go for Al Gore. You're right, John. And you know, we have to understand the politics of all this. Thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. We have to understand the politics of all this with a very clear eye. And move forward.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com, Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you at a time when only 13%, slightly more than 13%, less than 14%, fewer than 14% of Americans own stock, are invested in the stock market. And the vast majority of stocks owned are owned by the top 1%. We see this story in today's Financial Times by Eric Platt and Michael McKenzie in London. Shareholders in the biggest U.S. companies stand to receive a record $1 trillion in cash this year. $1 trillion. As blue chips concerns over the global economic outlook have diverted cash away from investment and is driving a boom in buybacks and dividends. Now, I would submit to you that it is not concern about a global economy that is causing companies to say, you know, we're not going to build new factories. We're not going to put money into R&D. We're not going to develop new products. We're not going to give our workers a raise. We are going to divert all of the profit that we're making into dividends because, you know, the reason I say this has nothing to do with the global economy is because when Reagan changed the rules of compensation, the IRS rules regarding CEO compensation in the United States and senior executive compensation in companies, to make it legal under the tax code for a company to reimburse their employees with stock options, which can be converted at capital gains tax rates, so they pay half the taxes or less than working people do in terms of federal income tax and state income taxes, that, you know, that door got opened back in the 80s, and it has been getting wider and wider and wider ever since. This is one of the main vehicles through which big corporations have become cash machines for billionaires and for multimillionaires, for the very wealthy in this country. $1 trillion in 2015, the Financial Times is projecting, will be distributed to shareholders in the United States, or at least among the biggest U.S. companies. Obviously, some of their shares are held overseas, but $1 trillion is going to be distributed to shareholders. Are we going to see an increase in the minimum wage? You know, even dramatic increase in the minimum wage would not cost $1 trillion. Is any of that money going to make its way to average working people? Is any of that money going to be used to develop new products, to build new factories? No, because they're doing just fine making their stuff in China, making their stuff in Vietnam, and selling it to you and me and offering us credit cards so we can continue to buy it. There are, in fact, the Russ Kestrick, BlackRock's global chief investment strategist, says there are tremendous amounts of cash on the books, and you have this very slow nominal growth in most countries, so there are fewer places to deploy that cash. So, in other words, hey, well, let's just take it ourselves. Let's just give ourselves all that money. General Electric on Friday, which has not paid taxes in years, General Electric announced that they were going to return $90 billion to shareholders over the next 3 years in dividends. See, if you own stock, many companies do what's called distributing dividends. They take part of their profits and they distribute it to the stockholders. And when you receive that, and it's money, it's income. And when you receive that check, that income is taxed at the capital gains rate rather than, if you've held the stock long enough, taxed at the capital gains rate rather than at the ordinary income rate. And, you know, so, hey, you pay a maximum, I think it's 20% right now. this kind of thing is what I want to have at the center of this upcoming presidential debate. How is the economy rigged? And what is the Democratic candidate going to do about it? Now, I think we know what the Republican candidate, whoever it is, will do about it. I mean, Marco Rubio today has, according to the New York Times, Rubio makes it official. He's running for the White House. Now, catch this. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida told his top donors today that he will be running for president in 2016. He didn't make his announcement to average working people. He didn't make his announcement to, whoever you might consider his constituents. He made his announcement to his real constituents, to the people that Marco Rubio really works for. As a Republican senator, his job is to be a shill for the rich people in this country. Period. End of discussion. There's basically nothing else that Republican senators are supposed to do except be shills for rich people. Oh, rich people, a lot of those rich people got rich with fossil fuels. I mean, Koch brothers inheriting a fossil fuel empire from their father, Rex Tillerson and buddies over at ExxonMobil. I mean, the list goes on and on. Oh, so they made a lot of money from fossil fuel. We Republicans will have to say that there's no such thing as global warming, so those people can continue to make obscene amounts of money. Oh, the fossil fuel industry is getting huge subsidies from the United States government, hundreds of billions of dollars a year, not only in direct cash payments to the fossil fuel industry, but also in exempting the fracking industry from things like the Clean Water Act and protecting the shipping lanes across the Atlantic and Pacific for our fossil fuel industry, shipping coal from the Midwest, or from even West Virginia and Ohio through the Great Lakes, and then onto trains across the western part of the country to China. We are paying for that, you and me. We are subsidizing that. We are subsidizing the safety and the security of that. It's our naval fleets that are protecting those ships. The same with the oil coming from Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Middle East. So that's the job of a Republican senator, to protect those people and their interests. Now, what's the job of a Democratic nominee for president or a Democratic senator? I would say, if you want to go back to the base of the Democratic Party, it would be to protect the interests of working people. And the interests of working people have been left on the table for 35 years now. President Obama has, great effort to try and get the minimum wage raised to $10.10 an hour so that these companies, the Walmarts of the world, the McDonald's of the world, can't run this scam anymore where you and I, the taxpayers, pick up a part of their cost of their labor by providing food stamps and housing and all kinds of, medical care and things like that to their employees. And it is a scam. This is a business model that, should not be considered a business model because it's a scam. It's a business model that requires, welfare payments coming from you and me going to people who are fully employed because their employers have chosen to pay them so little that those people still live below the poverty level. They still can't get by. Republicans, what do they have to offer them? Oh, they cut off long-term unemployment benefits a year and a half ago. That'll fix everything. And then what do you see go up? Suicides, home foreclosures, divorces, spousal abuse, general violence and chaos in society. That's what Republicans have to offer. So what are the policies now? Let's keep in mind, Hillary Clinton just announced she's running for president in a video announcement that had no ships, no tanks, no flags. The only flag was just, you glimpsed it as it passed by, but it wasn't, Hillary Clinton standing there with a flag in her hand kind of thing, or standing next to a flag. None of the normal military stuff, none of the, Yahoo, whatever. So instead, very straightforward, I'm here for you, she's saying. So what would we like out of a Hillary Clinton candidacy if that happens? Well, it is happening. Now, what position should she be taking?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I would start out with, let's roll back Reaganism, roll back Reaganomics. Let's admit we've made a 34-year mistake. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, that's interesting. Where do we go? There we go. Michael in Newport, Kentucky. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, I'm real happy to get to talk to you, Tom. Excuse me if I'm a little nervous. But anyway, I really like your show. You're very educational and you're very constructive.
Thank you.
And the thing I like about Hillary, she's got that mother image. I read her book from Tough Choices, and she, what I read was her business was very sincere, and I like that kind of stuff. She was constructive with her foreign affairs, which people don't know what a lot of these people do. And for Barack Obama, put him in there, I think he's done one excellent job. And sad that we got Republicans who lie and deceive and play fear tactics on people. And the way they do it with issues is so pitiful how people get caught up. It took me for years to come to reality, and I've never seen a Republican ever do anything for the people.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never.
I'm with you.
And
in fact, I keep asking Republicans, please name even one significant piece of legislation that Republicans either conceived or passed or both, basically since Reconstruction, and they can't come up with an answer that benefits the average working person rather than the millionaires. I mean, I could come up with a long list of legislation that Republicans have passed that benefits millionaires and billionaires. Anybody in this country who makes over $300,000 a year and has a net worth over $1 million is totally justified in voting for Republicans. You know, Republicans are the party of the rich, period. But anybody who's making less than $300,000 a year, anybody who's got a net worth of less than $1 million a year, and you know, which is the high end of the very high end of middle class in the United States, they're still crazy to vote for Republicans because the Republicans don't even care about the high end of the middle class. They only look out for the genuinely rich.
Yeah, you remember when Reagan was in power, when he said the bull was loose? Do you remember that?
I remember Reagan's presidency really well. I don't remember that phrase. Was he talking about the stock market?
I remember that really right. He said the bull is loose. What that? You know what that meant?
No, I don't.
And I know how I got paid for him the way the whole thing is, because the Republicans are within the workforce, I believe.
Michael,
and
when
he paid away, and he used people to letting people get by with murder, not doing stuff that they should have been doing. I used to say stuff to my fellow workers. I says, you know, they would brag about how they got by not working today and how they used the phrase screw the man. I said, well, I'm going to tell you something. And I seen the game, but I didn't really open my eyes up until Bush. That plan was going on for years. They played the game to get choice unions. And I told him, I says, the man has got it in you, and you're just too stupid to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, we only have a few seconds, Michael, but the bull is loose. What does it mean?
Well, then it means that people are being, they can't get a grip on their lives and steps. As far as Hillary Clinton, I think as a woman, she's a mother, she's sincere. And I think when Obama come in, that's what the message I was wanting to get to say, if anybody might really want to see. But Obama came in for the flags, and I think it was wonderful. I love the man. I think he's great. You know, nobody can be perfect. Never.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Michael, thank you for the call. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. This is interesting. Danielle just handed this to me. Susie Madrick is posting over at Crooks and Liars. I was on a call with Senator Sanders last night, and he said it's very important that you email or call your Congress members and senators this week, no matter where they stand on TPP. He said if we can kill it this time, it will stay dead for a long time because no one wants it to be an issue in the presidential campaign. And here's the story. This week, apparently, a bill to give the president fast-track authority designed to push through the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or what I call SHAFTA, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, with little public debate, will be introduced in the Senate. Big corporations wrote the TPP behind closed doors. TPP is much more than a... Well, you know the story about the TPP. I mean, we've talked about this many times. So Bernie says, you know, will you stand with me and DFA to help stop the TPP? That would be Democracy for America. Sign our petition here and tell the Senate no. Sounds like it's time to... I'm going to sneeze here in a minute. Excuse me. Sounds like it's time... It's time to call your senators. 202-225-3121 is the phone number for the switchboard for Congress. Call both your senators, Republicans or Democrats, it doesn't matter. Call them and say no to TPP, no to Fast Track. If Fast Track is going to come up for a vote this week, if Mitch McConnell is going to bring Fast Track up for a vote, please vote no. 202-225-3121 is the number. Bob in Atlanta. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, I'm a first-time caller, so I want to compliment you on your show and your rational, logical approach and your standing up for the importance of the middle class. So
thank you.
Sure. I wanted to talk about a couple of statements you made that are, I'm afraid, falling into the Republican narrative. I'm a strong Hillary supporter and was actually a delegate to the Democratic National Convention. Mm-hmm. So a couple of times you've asked, will Hillary be in a primary? So it's required that there is a Democratic primary across the country. So the real question is, will she have opposition in the primary?
Right, consequential opposition.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in the Democratic Party. So she may or may not have opposition, but it's definitely not a coronation process.
No, I don't think so either. Process. I mean, you know, Al Gore had an opponent in 2000.
Right.
What was it, Bill Bradley, as I recall?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would be astonished if there was a, quote, coronation. I don't think that's going to happen at all. And it looks like so far, at least, we have most likely Martin O'Malley, the former Democratic governor of Maryland, and Lincoln Chafee, the former Republican senator from Rhode Island, who became an independent and has now become a Democrat. And, I mean, if you like conservadems or if you like people who, you know, can kind of relate to the Republicans, maybe Lincoln Chafee is your guy. But we'll see. We'll see.
So in addition to there being a Democratic primary process that's required, the delegates are actually elected. I had to go through my own campaign to get elected to be a delegate. And then you have some leeway, depending on the rules, about who you vote for once you get to the convention.
Right.
So Hillary still needs to make sure that the people vote for her who are delegates to the convention. So there's still a lot of politicking she needs to do to keep people persuaded she's the best to nominate, which I think she is.
Yeah, we'll see where this goes. And and thank you, Bob, for the call. And please don't misinterpret anything I've said here. I am not formally endorsing Hillary Clinton. I will vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is. I think it's extremely likely that nominee is going to be Hillary Clinton, and I'm okay with that. And in fact, I think that what that means is that our job is to help Hillary Clinton. And it really is the grassroots. It really is the people who move political candidates. Genuinely. At least in the Democratic Party. In the Republican Party, obviously, it's the billionaires who do it. Unfortunately, thanks to the Supreme Court, billionaires have more and more influence over Democratic candidates as well. But it's our job, if she's the nominee or whoever the nominee, to push them in more progressive directions, particularly with regard to economics, particularly with regard to climate change. I mean, this is the issue that is literally the future of our planet, particularly with regard to the social safety net, Obamacare, and particularly with regard to the Supreme Court. The next president is going to nominate at least three and probably four or five members of the United States Supreme Court. That is amazing. That president has to be a Democrat. Even if it's a middle-of-the-road Democrat, even if it's a conservative Democrat, you do not want a Republican appointing four members of the United States Supreme Court. This country will go so far backwards, so fast, and in such a destructive and perhaps irreparable way. And you look at these 80-year cycles that I wrote about in my book, The Crash of 2016, where you have these crashes every 80 years followed by a world war. And that, as Jamie Dimon wrote recently, you know, that crash is coming, in my opinion. And with it comes enormous risk of war, not to mention the risks of war that we're all looking at right now. Do you want a bomb, bomb, bomb Iran Republican in the White House when that happens? I don't. I absolutely don't. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
In fact, as climate change is heating up and as war becomes more and more destructive and dangerous, having a Republican in the White House could be the end of the world. Welcome back to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. So, well, this is interesting. Kevin, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Well, I was disagreeing with the premise that we need to influence Hillary Clinton before we get her in office. And while I was on hold, you replied to another caller, and you're saying that you will vote for, when you said you'd vote for the Democratic nominee, whoever.
Yeah.
My point was going to be to say that I agree with Norm Goldman that it's a one-issue thing, Supreme Court, Supreme Court, Supreme Court, and you mentioned that as well. But I think it's just I'm going to be doing what I can to support Hillary despite anything I may have felt in the past because of that. And I think that is just so important to raise turnout, because if we raise turnout, we've even got the possibility of giving her a Congress that will work with her.
Right. And the way to do that is to avoid the tendency, which happens on both the left and the right among people who are real genuine progressives and genuine conservatives, is to avoid the tendency to create the circular firing squad for somebody who is not perfect.
We do not want to make the perfect the enemy of the good.
Yeah, there you go.
And let the Republicans slip in, because we're combating not a Republican. I don't think we're really combating a Republican. We're combating the low information and misinformed voters that you spoke about the other day, who will not be convinced even in the face of facts that disagree with what they believe.
Yeah, yeah.
You bring so much good information to the table. Thank you for being there.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for the call and thanks for listening. Chris in Dallas, listening to SiriusXM. Hey, Chris.
Yes, I'm a first-time caller, and I've always enjoyed your program, and I want to get a copy of your book, I believe it is, that you had written about the coming crash of 2016.
Thank you.
Be more informed. But I wanted to comment upon what you said, the importance of the Supreme Court. And the last caller kind of stole a little bit of my thunder. It is time we change our progressive voting enthusiasm to at least match that of Republicans and conservatives during midterm. I mean, they're Kool-Aid drinking, Fox News saturated propaganda stuff. They get out for the midterms, and we need to take back some of these governorships and these state houses where Republicans are forming policies on voting laws, and they're not finished yet, under the guise of voting fraud to try and disenfranchise a lot of the progressive base. And believe me, they have a plan to steal the 2016 election, just like I forget the author of the book who was from England, wrote about how they did in 2000 and 2004.
Right.
So these state houses, governorships, and we need to give Democrats control of the Senate so that whoever it, assuming it is Hillary, she can have a majority to be able to single shoot someone into the office. And I'm glad Harry Reid is leaving, because he's been a perfume prince.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mitch McConnell has made a fool out of him for most of the time he was in there. Every time they had one of these gentlemen's agreement, Mitch McConnell would go back and tweet his constituent, "We've stuck it to the liberals again." You remember
yeah.
those?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to make jokes about how this has been 5 or 6 years now. Back when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor of California, I was making jokes on the air about how somebody needed to show up outside the governor's mansion on the first day of the month when the testosterone arrived, you know, from Mexico for Arnold Schwarzenegger, and snatch it and get over to Nevada and give Harry Reid a shot of it. I just, you know, saw him as relatively ineffective up until the last year and a half or so. Last year and a half, I've been really surprised by what Harry Reid has done and very impressed. And I'm wondering to what extent that might be because, you know, that he was thinking that he was going to retire anyway. Although my guess is that his retirement has more to do with his having lost the eyesight in one of his eyes. And, you know, his body is now, you know, he's getting older and I think he's, well, I don't know. I am not inside Harry Reid's head, but, you know, I wish him well. And yeah, I would like to see somebody who really knows how to take names and kick ass in that Senate Majority Leader position. Thank you, Chris. Elaine in Albuquerque, listening on KABQ. Hey, Elaine, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I really was pleased that you talked about misogyny this morning because nobody does. And I was thinking back when I was studying a little bit more about women's history that John Lennon wrote a song called "Woman is a New N-Word." And I think he performed it a couple of times and then they said he couldn't do it anymore. And it explains a lot of what the blacks go through as well as what the women go through.
Yeah.
Have you read the lyrics of that?
I have not, but I will go looking for it now. And thank you for that, Elaine. And yeah, I you know, as I said, African-Americans got the vote before women did. African-American women were, you know, at the bottom of that pile along with white women getting the vote in 1920 with the 19th Amendment. But it's everybody in America, you say racism, and everybody in America may not exactly know what you're talking about, but they have a pretty damn good idea what you're talking about. You say misogyny in this country, and I'll bet 4 out of 5 average Americans don't know what you mean. I mean, I wish there was a better word for the hatred of women or for these destructive attitudes toward women in this country. But I have a feeling that the word misogyny is going to start getting used a lot more now. Hopefully the press will pick it up and it'll become, you know, an average and ordinary word and we'll get it. And I think, you know, frankly, Elaine, that I suspect, I may be wrong on this, but I suspect that some of the backlash, which we see in the Black Lives Matter movement, some of the backlash to police officers, white police officers killing black, by and large, black men and boys, has gotten its mojo, has gotten some juice, has been able to carry itself forward as aggressively and as far as it has, in part because you've got a black president and attorney general. And it kind of activates the media. So if we had a woman as president, and I don't know what we're going to have as attorney general, but if we had a woman as president, would we see the same thing start to happen? Would we see women across the United States starting to push back and men along with them? I mean, just like whites are supporting blacks in the Black Lives Matter thing, Black Lives Matter movement, as it were. Is it possible that we could take seriously, for example, the fact that women earn 73% of what men do, and they're locked out of all these places and they're not safe in many places. 1 in 5 women who goes to college is going to get raped, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that it could be transformational for this country. I really believe it. Elaine, thank you for the call. Helen in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Helen, thanks for listening to 1470 AM. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. Good afternoon. I'm just like, can't understand. Oh, my God. This Republican, Marco Rubio, okay, he, like a day after we get some progress done with Cuba, Raul Castro, and they're having like a mutual admiration thing going on with Barack Obama. And then he has to go to the
they call it the Ellis Island of Miami, where the people who hate the Castro government, you know, the Cuban exile.
Yeah, Little Havana.
Yeah, Little Havana. That's where he announces his candidacy. You know, and then we've got the 47 senators who sent something to the Ayatollah. You know, it's like that. Don't believe anything Barack Obama says. You know, we don't support it. It's not going to work. Like, they're doing everything they can to undermine the progress of democracy in this country.
That's
I mean, why are they in government to begin with? Why don't they go, like, work for a hedge fund or something?
Well, here's the thing. In this brave new world that the Supreme Court has given us, if you are in government, when you leave government, you can go to work for a hedge fund. It's like a really, really fast way in. All you have to do is be on one of the finance committees in Congress and help pass a few laws that help out the hedge fund guys. And, you know, they will make sure that, you know, just like Eric Cantor. Eric Cantor left the House of Representatives for, what, a $3 or $4 million pay package? I mean, it's astonishing. It's hard to imagine it as anything other than a payoff. And, yeah. It's and you know where Marco and then Marco Rubio saying, oh yeah, we can't have normalized relations with Cuba. I think Marco Rubio's candidacy is going to go nowhere fast. I think we're all going to be astonished by how quickly he falls.
We just want the military industrial complex.
Yeah. And all these guys, the Republican clown car, they're all falling all over each other to be, you know, the official candidate of the Republican or of the military-industrial complex of, you know, yeah, more war, more bombing, more whatnot. How much time do we have? 5 seconds. Okay. That's not fair to the next caller. Helen, thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. And this name, please. One Republican who is running for president who, if he won, there are no she's, who, if he won and his policies were put into place, would not do severe damage to this country. Can you? I don't think so. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour. Back with your thoughts. And we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News in a few minutes, too. 15 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and John watching Free Speech TV in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, with all due respect, you know, Hillary Clinton, you know, just doesn't really do anything for me. I mean, I'm, you know, too far on the left and too idealistic, you know, to, you know, really put my heart and soul into her. However, that being said, I'm going to soon be a recipient of Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, those two issues Democrats have solidly supported as is rather than, you know, as the Republicans want to make it into. And so, you know, that's where I'm left. Mm-hmm. And I feel, you know, that there are other people like me who also aren't really, you know, turned on by Hillary Clinton. Now, that being said, I think from what we've, you know, discussions that we've had in the past, like last week, I think, you know, there really does need to be a change of consciousness, and then from a change of consciousness to actual, you know, expression of that in active politics. We have a two-party system, and this is the way it, you know, this just is the way that it is. But I wanted to talk about the intersection of religion and politics. And I think it is really important. And I wanted to pick up maybe where I left off last week, which I think everyone should read this book. It's difficult read. It's like reading Max Weber. It's also difficult. But I think it really, kind of sums up the history of where we came from and where we're at, and that's to read Religion and the Rise of Capitalism by R.H. Tawney, and just take whatever you can get from that. There's a lot of gems in there. It really kind of makes...
When was it published, John?
Beg your pardon?
When was it published?
You know, it was published, I think, in 19... in the 1920s, and it's still as relevant then as it is today. I don't see that. I mean, the language is a bit difficult to understand because, you know, he goes into Latin a bit. He goes into French as if, you know, because it's taken from lectures and it's written for an audience of people of that time who are academics. But anybody who can read, that's the wonderful thing about, you know, literacy, is that they can understand it if they really put their heart and soul into it and read it. But I wanted to go on to say that as far as religious experience, I've learned so much from people of so many different faiths. And I wanted to talk about the Unitarians a bit because it illustrates, what kind of goes on there. And I think it's very, very healthy. I lived in a small town, and the Unitarian Church was a godsend in the sense that it represented a lot of very progressive people. It wasn't that they banned conservatives. They really do accept everybody. And what they do is exactly what you're doing in a sense. They have a discussion and they have people come in and they talk, different experts, people of all different backgrounds, philosophies and whatnot. And they discuss these kinds of things. And, I did participate in a demonstration against the first Gulf War. And I wanted to say that I thought it really didn't do anything. And that the person who was, there was somebody who was a Quaker that was there in the Society of Friends who, behind the scenes, very quietly do a lot of education about peace and justice.
Yeah. It's a great organization. John, thank you for the 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and find out what's going on today. Brought to you by the story of Sholene and Kir, the slave from South Sudan. You can watch it over at thanklist.com/watch. Victoria Jones with us. Hey, Victoria. Oh. Hang on just a second. Victoria?
Yes.
There you are.
Here I am.
At the White House. So what's going on today?
Yes. Well, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, Republican, told his top donors this morning that he's running for president in 2016.
Oh, it's interesting. Hillary Clinton wants to present herself as the person of the people. And so she releases a video that's mostly all about people, very little about her. And, you know, to everybody on social media, Marco Rubio, being a Republican, has to say, I'm one of the paid shills for the billionaires. And so he makes his announcement to a group of rich people.
Well, that's what he did first. Now, tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern, he will speak at Miami's Freedom Tower. And that's where he will make his official announcement. At 43, he's angling to become the young face of the Republican Party, a party that skews older. And he wants to emphasize a message that of optimism and American greatness, and he wants to bring in Hispanic voters and African American voters and younger voters, and he wants to emphasize the American dream.
Good luck with that. I think that he's preparing to run for president in 2020. And this is what Republicans do first. You have to have lost a primary before you can run for the next primary, before you can become the nominee of the party. I mean, it's worked that way ever since, with the exception of Dwight Eisenhower, ever since the 50s, I believe.
Well, that may be. And he's maybe going to burn a bridge with former Governor Jeb Bush in the process.
Yeah.
Mentor.
And I'm predicting that the Republican nominee is going to be Jeb Bush with Scott Walker as his running mate. But we'll see. Who knows?
Well, a lot of people are saying that it's going to be essential to have a woman as a vice presidential candidate.
On the Republican side?
On both sides.
A
woman on the ticket of both sides.
So they're going to dust off Sarah Palin?
They would put somebody on.
That's a scary thought.
I don't think they'd dust off Sarah Palin, but they'd put somebody on. Maybe Kelly Ayotte.
Huh. Well, she's competent and smart. I mean, I disagree with her politics. You're talking the Republican senator from New Hampshire?
From New Hampshire, correct, yeah.
Yeah.
There are a number of people who I think they're considering, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Meantime, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy said today, he's Republican, or signaled that the Senate bill giving Congress the right to review an Iran nuclear deal would have a veto-proof majority in the House. Now, the Congress is back after a two-week break for Easter. Takes that long to eat all the chocolate, apparently. They're back. There are hearings today and tomorrow in the House and the Senate with Secretary of State John Kerry, Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz, and Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. These are classified briefings to review the Iran interim deal. And there is going to be a review of the Senate bill in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee tomorrow. So McCarthy signaling that the bill would have a veto-proof majority in the House is significant.
Yeah, it is. And Kevin McCarthy, was one of the 14 members of the caucus room conspiracy. He was there that night, January 20th, 2009, and he was the one who said afterwards, we've got to oppose them on every single piece of legislation, period.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, who, of course, was the author of the letter signed by 47 Republican senators to the Iranian leaders, said in an interview published today in The Atlantic, saying that if we agreed to the kind of proposal the Obama administration's made, then military confrontation may be further off, but it might also be nuclear. But he actually suggested that one option to prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons was to conduct military strikes against the country now.
Right. Brilliant. Brilliant.
House Democrats introduced a resolution today urging bolstering discrimination protections for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people following last month's passage of an Indiana controversial religious freedom law.
Victoria, I understand that there's a possibility that the that SHAFTA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Fast Track Authority, might come up in the Senate this week. Have you heard anything about that?
There is a possibility of that. I don't know details of that, but it is moving.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Okay, because Senator Sanders is telling everybody, call your senator now and say no.
No, so that's all I know, that it is moving.
Okay.
Yeah. President Obama's request for congressional authorization of military force to fight ISIS does not have enough support to pass the House of Representatives. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy said today, he said the plan would weaken our ability to respond to the current situation. I asked Josh Earnest at the White House press briefing for a response to this today. He basically said that he wasn't surprised, and he seemed disappointed that the House would want to weaken the president. John Legend, the Grammy-winning singer, has launched a campaign to end mass incarceration.
Hmm.
He announced a multi-year initiative called Free America Today. Hmm. He's going to visit and perform at a correctional facility on Thursday in Austin. He's also going to be part of a press conference with state legislators to discuss Texas criminal justice system. And it's going to be a major deal. He's going to visit a California state prison, co-host a criminal justice event with Politico in Washington later this month. It's going to involve help from other artists to be announced and organizations committed to ending mass incarceration.
Amazing. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service at the White House today. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. And this news brought to you by the story of Sholene and Kier, the slave from South Sudan. Thanklist.com/watch.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer. maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. We will get back to our conversation about politics in just a moment. But you'll recall a week or two ago, I shared with you a story out that was, I believe it was published in Science. It was just a fascinating story about how the emulsifiers and surfactants that are put into processed food so that things will mix with each other and not separate out, basically. What these chemicals do is they change the way different compounds relate to each other and particularly to cell membranes, that they may be responsible for, there's increasing concern that they may be responsible for part of the epidemic of irritable bowel syndrome and other digestive disorders in the United States, because they're messing with the membranes in the gut, and they're messing with the membranes of the bacteria in the gut, which is destroying that. So anyhow, that was a fascinating one. And now, you know, what about Corexit? What about this stuff? Again, it's a dispersant. Dr. Vina Antony is with us, professor at the Division of Pulmonary Allergy and Critical Care Medicine at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. AUB.edu is the website. Dr. Vina, or Dr. Antony, welcome to the program.
Tom, glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So what are you learning about this the stuff that was sprayed in the Gulf of Mexico to make the oil dissolve into the water or settle to the bottom, vanish, whatever, the Corexit stuff, this controversial dispersant?
So Corexit, as you know, was used in the Gulf oil spill, and we examined the effects of Corexit on the respiratory epithelium. The lung, as you know, is in constant contact with the environment because of the air that we breathe in, and we wanted to evaluate if this dispersant had, or as you described it as an emulsifier, had any effect on the respiratory epithelium of different species, both mammals and aquatic animals. And what we found was that, yes, the Corexit had the potential to cause injury to respiratory epithelial surfaces in our breathing tubes and in the gills of aquatic animals, and that more importantly was that we had discovered that there was a naturally occurring enzyme that, if produced in adequate quantities, can inhibit or protect from some of the effects of Corexit.
Hmm. That's interesting. And by respiratory epithelial cells, epithelial, I believe, means what, surface cells? Usually the skin is referred to as that. So these would be the exterior cells in the lungs, the cells that are actually in contact with air that goes through our lungs?
Absolutely, Tom. They're the first cells to interact with any environmental insult. And the epithelium is naturally a membrane that is protective, that has basically no holes in it to let toxic elements through. So it's a very tightly bound membrane.
Right.
But the one effect that we noticed when we examined these cells, human cells, in vitro, was that there was a change in the permeability of this, allowing the movement of molecules through the membrane into deeper portions of the lung.
So, and in vitro, meaning in a test tube or in a petri dish.
Or in a flask, yeah.
Right. Is there any epidemiological data to support a conclusion that Corexit has had a direct and measurable negative effect on human health in the Gulf region?
I don't think that there is direct evidence, and that it is an area of significant research through the NIH-guided studies and through multiple other studies that are ongoing in the Gulf region. We just examined materials in the test tube, so to speak. We did not look at them in vivo. The animals that we examined, the aquatic animals, the fish and the crabs, those we examined in vivo.
In vivo meaning you examine the actual animal itself.
True, true. We had core exit in the water that passed through the gills of fish and crabs.
Right. And was the consequence of that fatal? Was it just damage? Is there recovery from that damage? What does it do? Would it be like smoking, for example, damaging the lungs, or more like inhaling bleach, or more like inhaling, a solvent?
It would be like if somebody inhaled soap solution, dishwashing.
Right, a surfactant.
In the aquatic animals, at low doses, it was very reversible, but at higher doses, it caused significant edema in the gills, and after 500 parts per million, they did not survive.
Wow. Edema meaning they swelled up with water from within. Yeah.
Yes, there was swelling of the gills so that no more water could pass through the gills of the fish and the crabs.
Huh. Meaning that this chemical has presumably interrupted the normal process of moving fluids through the membranes of the gills that the body would normally be doing, not the external fluid, not the water, but the internal fluids, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. Fascinating stuff. So where do we go with this knowledge, Dr. Antony?
Oh, I think some of the work that we presented and some of the research that is ongoing here at UAB is actually provides a message of hope. There is a strong, multi-pronged effort by multiple colleagues and scientists and clinicians here to further find ways to increase the expression of this one enzyme that was protective.
Right.
And if we can do that, then perhaps if there is another event where there is exposure, we might be able to mitigate it or abrogate it or at least inhibit it somewhat.
Right. And presumably in vivo, in the body of the animals, as opposed to adding that enzyme. I'm assuming if we were to add that enzyme to Corexit itself and continue using Corexit, it would just neutralize Corexit's ability to do what it does to dissolve the oil.
One would hope that we could use it, yes, in definitely in people,
yeah,
to upregulate this enzyme.
Right. Fascinating stuff. Dr. Vina Antony, you are doing marvelous work, professor at the Division of Pulmonary Allergy and Critical Care Medicine at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, uab.edu. Thank you so much for dropping by today.
Thank you, Tom.
It is great talking with you. I really appreciate it. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. So, Randy in Bellingham, Washington, listening on KBAI. Hey, Randy, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I heard on the news that GE is selling off all of their real estate holdings and getting out of banking.
Yeah.
Could it be that they foresee the coming crash?
It's possible. I think it's more likely that Dodd-Frank caught up with them. That's, I read an interesting piece over the weekend, as I recall, in the Financial Times about how GE was doing this. They were basically getting out of the banking business. A lot of companies, I mean, this was the whole fad. This was started by Ken Lay at Enron. The ability of a company like Enron or GE to be in the banking business was granted through legislation that Phil Graham pushed through Congress in 99 or 2000, the Graham-Leach-Bliley, which did away with Glass-Steagall and allowed a whole variety of companies to become banks and allowed banks to become more than just banks. So I think that what happened is, the Dodd-Frank tightening up of the bank rules, they're still phasing in, year by year. And a lot of it was structural framework and the agency, the SEC and other agencies associated with that are responsible for coming up with rules. And I think, at least the official story I'm reading is the GE said, it's not worth it. I suspect, Randy, though, that, you may be right. It may be that they know that really, really bad times are coming for banks, and they're just saying, hey, it's time to get the heck out of this business. I don't know. Randy, thank you for the call. Interesting speculation. We'll be back 15 minutes past the
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, your thoughts on Hillary Clinton, on Marco Rubio, on Rand Paul. Who else has announced that they're running? Oh, yeah, Ted Cruz. How could I forget? Welcome back. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You want to weigh in about Hillary?
Yeah, I want to thank you first for being there and doing what you're doing in spite of all the nonsense we have to put up with.
Thank you.
I was hoping that Dr. Anthony would just come out and say outright, we need to put a moratorium on the use of Corexit. And by the way, let's put a moratorium on fracking. We're screwing around with nature way too much.
Yeah.
Things are too fragile. There's no exit planet to go to. But I guess that's hoping for too much.
Well, it's not hoping for too much. It's hoping for the wrong thing from the wrong person. She is a researcher, not a policymaker. That research should inform policy. And the policymakers should be making those decisions and coming to those conclusions, those being our elected politicians. Unfortunately, they by and large are not, because in places like Florida and Wisconsin, you know, the policymakers are not even allowed to use the phrase climate change.
It's reminding me about that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what you get when you get Republican governance.
Yeah, and I know it was wishful thinking, and I know the distinction between her as a policy advisor and a policymaker. Trust me, I don't think any policymakers are reading your book. Maybe some bankers are.
Could be.
Listen, I want to take a little bit of disagreement with what you said earlier on an hour or two ago.
Sure.
You had indicated that people who call in, so these repo party trolls who want to smash Hillary, you know, let them smash her, and you're capable of countering them. That's not going to deter people from voting. The people who've made a decision like me not to vote, it's already done. If you really want to do something positive, I think promote the idea for liberal activists across the country to go ahead and push for what I told you last time I talked to you about a modified ballot starting at the national level for presidential candidates. So we have the option when we go to the polling booth, if we put down $2 or $5, we get to say why we're voting for none of the above. You get maybe 200 or 500 characters for $500. $2, you get 140 character space to enter why you are not voting for any of the above.
Right.
And then you pass a law saying your congressmen are required to review these and issue their report. So it puts them out in the open, on record, that they're in contrast to their voters.
Yeah. Anything that ties money to voting is going to be a violation of, I believe, of the next to the last constitutional amendment passed, was it 26 or 27, the one that says no poll taxes? I share your, wouldn't it be nice if we had none of the above as an option? You can vote for none of the above simply by not voting for any of those people. You know, there's a lot of people who go and vote, and they'll vote for the president, but they don't vote for Senate, or they'll vote for the senator, but not for the president. You can do that, Johnny, right now. And when they tabulate the numbers, they see how many people chose not to vote for that office. Isn't that a none of the above vote?
No, it's not. And I'll tell you why. Going back to Ronald Reagan, he was a Republican. We had a Republican in the White House, and we had a majority Democratic Senate and Democratic Congress. And look what happened there. And I'll share with you a secret that I am somewhat ashamed of now. I did this as a sarcastic vote back in 1979. I voted for Ronald Reagan for president, and I voted all Democrats and Independents and Green Party for everything else because I thought I was registering a sarcastic vote.
Yeah.
But in the end, you have to have an official mechanism. It has to be on the ballot. I vote for none of the above and give a reason as to why.
Yeah, an affirmative negative statement. I understand. Johnny, thank you for the call. Good luck with that. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Tom in Martinsburg, West Virginia. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
You were mentioning the voter suppression laws, these voter ID laws Republicans have been passing.
Right.
Did it ever occur to anybody to maybe have drives to get people who don't have the IDs down to the DMV offices?
And, there was an organization that was doing that, and they were doing a really good job of that. And they did not commit any crimes at all, but James O'Keefe made it look like they did. He lied.
Yeah.
And Acorn no longer exists. So, yeah, we actually had a national infrastructure to do just that, and the Republicans took it down.
Well,
Fox News took it down.
Somebody needs to put it back up. That's all there is to it. And as far as James O'Keefe looking like a pimp, he looked like Kramer on Seinfeld. Remember when he had the coat of many colors? And was
That's what
he looked like.
Except he looked like that when he went on television, when he sat in the office with the fellow from the Acorn office. He was dressed like a lawyer, and he completely differently, and you know, another piece of the fundamental dishonesty that is James O'Keefe's work. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, you're not happy with Hillary Clinton?
No, I've been waiting a long time. I think I'll talk about something else. I think you're asking the wrong question. Who's going to be the best candidate to fight the police state that we're slipping into? I think the next world war is already baked in the cake. There's no way you can stop that. When the economy collapses, they're going to see that's the only way out of it is to fight a new war and build lots of bombs and throw them at each other, and everybody's going to do it just so they can boost their economy. I don't
God
think
forbid.
That's avoidable. I don't see that as possible to avoid.
Yeah.
But we are slipping into a police state, and anybody, you know, the only person that's talking about ripping down the police state is Rand Paul, unfortunately.
Yeah. And he's even backing off on a lot of that so-called libertarian, really liberal rhetoric.
I'll be honest with you. I think anybody that tries to dismantle the military-industrial complex and the police state will be assassinated by, like, the CIA or something.
I think anybody who does is going to have they don't need to assassinate them. All they need to do is, the big defense contractors, and they can do it legally now, is throw a few billion dollars.
No. If he gets elected president, as the president, you'll get assassinated if you try to rip apart the police state.
Yeah. God forbid. Ed, thank you for the call. Van in Gordonsville, Virginia. Hey, Gordon. Hey, Van, what's up?
Well, you mentioned earlier today about 52% of people that don't invest.
It's more than that. Only 13% of Americans own stock, in any consequential way, you know, more than $1,000 worth of stock. 13%.
Well, I thought of something that could help the poor and the middle class, and it would be a government and private partnership. And what I would think would work well would be to help people that don't know how to invest. And the way to do it would be to give them $50 a month. That's a starting figure, and an investment counselor, volunteer, and teach them how to invest.
Yeah.
Everybody that is getting food stamps, and everybody that's getting an earned income tax credit, and everybody that's getting welfare would be qualified for it. And this would teach people how to invest in the stock market and keep people in bonds and futures and things like that. So it would be, I would call it a shrub fund rather than a hedge fund. It would be for everybody rather than just for a few.
Mm-hmm.
And this would allow people that don't know how to invest because of two things. One, they don't have the money, and two, they don't know how. And it would give them the money to do it. It would be like a microloan, like they do in Europe.
I understand all that, Van. But why should we become a nation of investors? Why? What's wrong with saying, you know, if you work hard your entire life, you know, keep your nose clean, do your job, you will be able to raise a family. You will be able to buy a house. You will be able to retire with dignity, and you don't have to learn how the stock market works.
Well, because that's where the money is, and that's where all the money goes.
No, I'm saying let's go back to the days when jobs came with pensions. Let's or let's strengthen Social Security to the point where it functionally is a pension. Let's increase Social Security payments by at least half.
Would be good too, but I think it would be very hard to change how the rich make their money. The poor get added on. They get, like, you get $10 extra and you can go out and buy something.
Right.
But the rich get multiplied of their investments.
Sure.
The poor people, it's all the difference between addition and multiplication. And and the poor and middle class don't get multiplication of their effort. Yeah. They just get added on.
No, I absolutely understand. I just, you know, I'm not opposed, Van, to educating people about investing and all that kind of thing, but the vast majority of Americans have nothing to invest, or if they were to try, you know, I saw a statistic the other day, I don't have it at my fingertips, that indicated that the average person who has started putting money aside in their 20s in a 401k or IRA, by the time they're 65 and they take that money out and they can spend that money, they will have lost over $100,000 in fees and charges to the investment advisors and the various brokerages and all this kind of stuff. And if it's managed money, it's even higher than that. And it's just like the whole, you know, there's this industry in the United States, this financial industry, that is hanging around our necks like an albatross. It's just it's dragging down the economy, and doing anything to increase the number of people who are, quote, invested in that marketplace, I think it's putting people at risk, because, hey, you know, look at all those people who were invested in the market in 1929. It did not work out well for them. Or in 2006-07. In 2008 came, it didn't work out well for them. So my instinctive response is not to want to go down that road. But I understand we are already halfway down that road. And then on top of that, people don't have a clue what to do with the money that they're setting aside. Van, thank you for the call. It's 28 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So Hillary Clinton has announced. Your response? Amazing. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This is a really interesting piece over at MediaMatters.org. And it's written by Alexandria Bogan, and it's titled "Media Largely Ignore the GOP's Dark Money Problem." And, you know, they point out that while the national news media in the United States have been very, very quick to jump all over the Clinton Foundation taking money and question whether that is influencing positions that Hillary Clinton is taking or has taken, they're not talking about, they're literally not talking about the dark money that doesn't have to be disclosed. The Clinton Foundation discloses all its donors. The Conservative Solutions Project, Inc., which is a super PAC that was started by, shares a name and founder with the guy who runs Marco Rubio's official super PAC, does not have to disclose to anybody who it gets its money from or its expenses. And already the group, Alexandria writes, already the group has commissioned a minutely detailed 270-page political research book on early state primary voters last year from a firm on Rubio's payroll. Right. And then Jeb Bush gave his tacit endorsement to a dark money group called Right to Rise Policy Solutions, a nonprofit established by the former Bush staffer who shares a name with two Bush-affiliated political committees. The Washington Post reported in March, this also allows Bush to work around disclosure requirements and campaign finance laws that cap donations from individual donors. Yet news of Bush's shadow campaign group failed to garner significant media attention, with just a scattering of articles outlining the dark money connections and merely two segments running on broadcasted cable news the day following the Washington Post report, both on MSNBC, by the way. Media similarly ignored allegations that Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker participated in a pay-to-play dark money scheme, allegedly providing special tax cuts for the company of the richest man in Wisconsin after he made secret donations to a Walker-linked political advocacy group. After Yahoo News reported the revelations on March 23rd, the news went unmentioned on broadcast and cable news, aside from a single segment in the March 24th edition of MSNBC's The Rachel Maddow Show, and received only scant newspaper attention. So what we have here is a media double standard. But, hey, you know, it's the Clintons. There's always a media double standard. Tina in Putney, Vermont. Hey, Tina, what's on your mind?
Hi there. Hi. Well, I'm referring back to a couple of conversations back, a few conversations back, where the woman said, why don't they all just go work for a hedge fund? You know, our representatives that seem to be in that line of thinking. And, you know, I agree with that statement, and I would bring it up a little bit more, saying, well, I think they actually are, even if it's just sort of in a values way. And
talking about our politicians.
A contempt for the fellow human being and not wanting a level playing field. And I feel that a lot of the real extreme right-wing value system seems to show a contempt for the very system that they are thriving in,
yeah.
which is a democracy, or used to be a democracy. But so, like, I think, you know, a solution might be to encourage our progressives to have more unity, have more of a common ground, like the Bernie Sanders and the Elizabeth Warrens and the, Jeff Merkley's, these people,
Sherrod Brown.
They could,
yep.
Unity is the answer. It's like, how do you, to bring it down to the simple, basic problem, how do you teach your child to deal with a bully?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can run to the administrator, but a lot of times the administrators are afraid of the bullies or their parents. And we have a similar type of thing. It's like the power is in us and how we support our legislators and also mandate at the same time through our voting, our participation, and, demanding a value system and, you know, privatizing the media and privatizing the Internet and social, you know, like the social programs that should be for all, like education and healthcare. You know, privatizing, making everything that we have in common for profit alienates most people. It's almost like we're supporting the wealthy to just hoard their money. You know, we have reality.
It's not almost like we are doing that, Tina.
Yeah, it is. And it's a reality. And I think if we can talk in the terms of it is really happening this way, I understand things more on a basic term. And like the abstract concepts I get eventually, but it takes a lot of work. And I think that the broke and the low-income people are so busy trying to get by, it's really hard to know a politician's thorough record.
Yeah.
And a lot of these things need to be more out there.
Well, this is what the political class these days depends on. A, that the reporting that's being done is going to be highly partisan and highly selective, that you're going to get very different news about candidates from Fox News than you are from MSNBC, for example, and that CNN isn't going to touch anything that's like serious or dangerous or you know, seriously questioning anybody. And so the average voter is not just uninformed, but then, you know, because of the Supreme Court saying that money is speech and you can dump unlimited amounts of it into the so-called marketplace, then on top of that, you've got the situation, and it's a horrible one, of corporations basically buying our politicians and it's, how do you have a functioning democracy in that kind of a situation? How can, for example, Hillary Clinton, she's going to have to raise $2.5 billion. How do you thread the needle? How could even Bernie Sanders thread that needle between raising $2.5 billion on the one hand and not selling your soul on the other? It's going to be very, very hard, if not impossible, which means that our political system has been so changed by our Supreme Court decisions, going back to Buckley in 76 and Citizens United, McCutcheon in particular recently, our political system has been so changed, so altered by the Roberts Court, that we now no longer have a functioning democracy. We have an oligarchy. And the big debate is, you know, which oligarchs are going to win? Is it going to be the Democratic billionaires who are supporting Hillary Clinton? Or is it going to be the Republican billionaires who are supporting, you know, Jeb Bush or Scott Walker? It's like, you know, and is that any way to run a country? I think not. Tina, excellent points all. Thank you for the call. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, great show, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, we need to vote Republicans out, but if the Republicans keep control of Congress, we're going to need Hillary or Bernie or any Democrat to block the Republicans' destructive agenda. And you had mentioned that anyone who has less than $1 million is not represented by the Republicans, which is absolutely true. But also, Republicans only represent sociopathic billionaires and polluters. because people who have up to $5 million still need their Medicare, which the Republicans are trying to cut. And even people who have hundreds of millions of dollars still need Democrats to protect our air and our water and our planet and protect our food safety and roads and bridges. And luckily, there are a few smart billionaires who realize the Republicans are conning them. And, you know, also most billionaires and millionaires don't benefit from the recessions and depressions the Republicans always cause.
Yeah. Yeah. All excellent points, Paul. Thank you very much. Bruce in Trenton, Florida. Hey, Bruce, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good to talk with you, man.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk to you about basically, you know, the Hillary run and the fact that it's all going to remain the same until the voters unite and have more representation of the voters. Because we have all the votes, Tom, but we don't have high-powered lobbyists to make sure the job gets done.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to unite as voters. We need to have united voters for equal representation and create our own super PAC. So we can get the people to get the politicians to do what we want them to do. In other words, Tom, I think we've got to buy the country back.
Yeah, yeah, I'm buy our country back. Whoa, but yeah, I get your point, Bruce, and it's an excellent one. Thank you for the call, David in San Francisco. Hey, David, what's up?
Oh, howdy, Tom. You know, I heard an earlier caller talking about the. You know, the looming police state, I think, was one of his phrases, as if it's coming. There's always a way to bust that, and one of them is through the auditors. You know, if you think about it, the police state budget is always up for scrutiny. And when you start looking at whether or not the cops are honest, that usually breaks apart the police state. So, you know, not giving in to fear is certainly a big deal. And I was going to suggest maybe a guest. I've been paying attention. Out in Missouri, they had the death of the auditor of the state. This was about a month ago. It was declared a suicide. But he, if you look at his very last report, he was studying the police very seriously. He had discovered something like $7.5 million missing from just the license plate and furniture fund of the prisons, right?
This is in Oklahoma.
And then the asset forfeiture. You beg pardon?
In Oklahoma, did you say?
No, that was Missouri.
Missouri.
Yeah. Now I'm noticing this story in Pittsburgh, PA. The local auditor for the county there is trying to do her normal job of auditing, and the airport, the ports, the sewers, the police, the county government will not submit to her documents for a normal audit. And so it's as if the entire government of Pittsburgh is refusing to live up to what the auditor is supposed to do.
Amazing. Amazing. It's not unlike Chris Christie and Bridgegate. David, thank you for the call. I think if your question was, should we be running for positions like controllers and auditors? Absolutely. We need to get the Democratic Party involved and progressives involved in every single race.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if you're looking for a job, you know, a lot of these local positions that are elected have paychecks attached to them. Welcome back. Brett in Denver, Colorado, watching Free Speech TV on cable there. Hey, Brett, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you. It's on your mind.
I just wanted to weigh in a little bit on Hillary. I read a piece. I work for a newspaper, and we print the New York Times. So I read the New York Times last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw her strategy, and I'm excited for that, because what we have in Hillary, I believe, is a seasoned pro with dealing with Republicans.
Yeah.
And she's smarter than all of them.
And she knows their game plan. She knows how they work. I think Barack Obama, God bless him, you know, but I think his first couple of years, he was so naive. He actually thought he could work with these guys. He had, you know, he'd only spent 2 years in the United States Senate. And I don't think he had any idea. I think he does now. And I think he's starting to take names and kick ass now. But I don't think he had any idea the first couple of years of what he was up against. And Hillary knows it well.
She does. And she learned from this last campaign. And what she outlined was things that working class people, she's not even going to talk about the middle class, because if anybody thinks there's a middle class in the United States anymore, they're deluded.
Right.
We are working class. Yeah. And that means we're poor.
Yeah.
We can't get ahead. And yeah. So she's framing, I believe she's going to frame her campaign along those lines. And I think it's a stepping stone, Tom, for all of us Americans that have been disenfranchised by the neo-fascist state.
Right.
And that is, we use her to get our footing, and then the next elections or the next Congress, we're riled up and motivated to bring in true democracy back to the United States.
Well, this is, you know, one of the things that I like about Bernie Sanders, one of the things I like about Elizabeth Warren, and one of the things that I hope about Hillary Clinton, is that the first two are radical truth tellers, and they are willing to take names and kick ass. And I know that Hillary Clinton has the ability to do that, and she was a very progressive senator. A couple of votes that were probably mistakes, like the vote for the war in Iraq, but by and large, she was a very progressive senator. And I think that she's not going to roll over for these Republicans. I mean, it's good. This is actually probably the biggest challenge that she has running for office, is when they go after her in ways that are unfair and personal and wound her. How does she respond? Because if she responds the way that a band might respond, you know, with a semi-angry response, you know, that's not true, here's what the real truth is, then everybody is going, you know, there are negative female characterizations that are used by men in society to describe that kind of behavior. On the other hand, if she doesn't push back, she's going to lose the election. And, you know, it's going to be a tough one. It's the same, you know, the same not coming across as the angry black man thing that Barack Obama has had to deal with for 6.5 years. And, you know, I wish America was smarter and wiser and more egalitarian. But anyway, you like her low-key approach. Do I have that right, Brett?
Yes, absolutely, Tom. I think that is it's got to speak to the disenfranchised.
Yeah, I'm with you. We'll see how it goes. 10 minutes before the hour. Thank you, Brett. It's going to be a real interesting year and a half. Or what is it? 19 months now, I think, until the election. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you. Fascinating stuff. Carl in Chicago. Hey, Carl. You want to talk about corporate dividends?
Happy Monday.
Thank you. Back at you.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up that topic. As you mentioned, companies that are so flush with cash, they're doing share buybacks, and they're also doing stock options for their executives. And there's also now, we see it happening all around us, there's a major increase in mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, it's like the early Reagan years all over again.
Exactly. And coincidentally, now some of those mergers are good and they make sense, but some of them not so much, and they lose money and they're forced to spin them off, usually at a loss, like a big company that bought Snapple and had to spin it off because it didn't work. But I personally witnessed the demise of International Harvester, which was a huge company, and one CEO started buying up as many companies as he could buy, a lot of them not even related to their core business. When the economy tanked in the 80s, they didn't have enough cash to survive, so they were forced to sell off their ag, what they called the ag division, you know, the heavy equipment.
The harvesters.
Like, pardon?
The harvesters.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And a company called J.I. Case bought the ag division, and International Harvester now exists under the name International, and it's only trucks. It's only trucks. Huh. But the other interesting thing that you were talking about Acorn being banned, I also couldn't believe that the League of Women Voters was banned in Florida. And I, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how they could justify doing that, because they were doing something, I think, something similar to what Acorn was doing. They were just trying to get people registered.
Right. What happened was Florida passed one of these laws. I don't know if the Koch brothers and Alec were involved or not, but they passed one of these laws, these draconian voting laws, that basically said that if you sign somebody up to vote and there is anything wrong with that signature, or you don't turn it in within, I think it was 3 days if you hold on to it, and if you don't handle the paper in a particular way, and you know, all these onerous rules, that you would be subject to criminal penalties. And at that point, the good women of the League of Women Voters said, okay, we are not going to put our volunteers at that kind of risk, and they stopped what they were doing in Florida. You're absolutely right. And this is just,
you know what? I was stunned when I heard that.
Yeah. But those laws are being replicated in states all over the country, so that the League of Women Voters will not participate in elections, which is shocking.
Isn't that stunning? Isn't that shocking? You know?
Yeah, it really is. A friend of ours works for the League of Women Voters. In fact, they were over at our place yesterday. It's a crime against democracy, Carl. I don't know how to describe it beyond that. Thank you for the call. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
Oh, Tom.
Hey.
Yeah, we got to get off of this income inequality and start with a different program. Bring our unions back.
Yeah.
Because that's the only method for income inequality.
Well, it's one of the principal methods. I wouldn't say it's the only one. The tax policy is huge, Corky. When Reagan dropped the top tax rate on rich people from 74% down to 25%, and then took capital gains down to 15%, that began in the mid 80s. That began a flow of cash from the average working person to the rich people that has added up to, I've seen numbers as low as $6 or $8 trillion. I've seen numbers as high as $40 trillion has basically been removed from the net asset base, the net wealth of the American working class, the American middle class, and handed to the top 0.1% and above. And that's a big deal. Yeah, I mean, you know, unions. The reason that the Republicans are so hell bent for leather to destroy unions, and it's not, in part, the companies don't like unions because they have to pay their workers more, but it's that traditionally the funding base for the Republican Party has been businesses and business people, and the funding base for the Democratic Party has been working people and the unions that they work for. And so, yeah, and so if they can destroy the unions, they're destroying the funding for the Democratic Party. And they've been very successful in doing this. We've gone from over 30% unionization to under 8% now, just since Ronald Reagan took office. And that means that the Democratic Party has lost a massive amount of, both money and people on the ground. And so you're going to see more and more
through the small U. You see, 30% of the unionized labor force that we had accounted for 85% of the wages.
Yeah,
because non-union companies were paying their people comparable wages to keep the unions out.
That's right. For every union job, there was essentially an identical non-union job, and still is the case. It's just that now it's 8% rather than 34%.
Yeah, it's only like 30% of it accounts for 30% of the wages.
Yeah.
I'm saying is, when the union people were making decent wages, they had extra money to participate in the political system. You could get campaign donations.
Very few people do, though, Corky. Other than checking the box on their IRS forms, and that's a program that needs to be expanded. Corky, I got to move along, but thanks for the call. It's always thought provoking to hear from you, Rose in Canandaigua, New Yorker.
Yes, Canandaigua.
Canandaigua.
Back to your topic about what you mentioned, thread the needle. I think that's true. I think we do need to thread the needle. And instead of putting so much focus on this voter ID that people don't have a voter ID, most people here in the good old U.S. of A. have a voter ID. Anyone who cashes a social services check has to have a non-driver's license photo ID. That's what they use, so they have one. So I don't see the photo ID is the big problem, because most people have it because they need money. They have to cash a check of some sort.
Yeah, Rose, if you're over 70 and you're living at home and first of all, they've got direct deposit now. There are, and there's a lot of college students. They write, these Republicans, these criminals, write these laws so that, for example, in Texas, if you have a gun, a carry carry concealed carry permit, you can vote with that. But if you're a student at a state university, which means you've had to qualify for in-state tuition, your residence, all that kind of stuff, you cannot use that ID. They just don't want young people voting, or old people, or poor people. It's that simple. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget, democracy begins with you, Tag.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.